be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Herod was the one who had had John the Baptist arrested and bound in prison on account of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip, whom he had married. John had said to Herod, "It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife." Herodias harbored a grudge against him and wanted to kill him, but was unable to do so. Herod feared John, knowing him to be a righteous and holy man, and kept him in custody. When he heard him speak, he was very much perplexed, yet he liked to listen to him. She had an opportunity one day when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet for his courtiers, his military officers, and the leading men of Galilee. Herodias' own daughter came in and performed a dance that delighted Herod and his guests. The king said to the girl, "Ask of me whatever you wish and I will grant it to you." He even swore many things to her. "I will grant you whatever you ask of me, even to half of my kingdom." She went out and said to her mother, "What shall I ask for?" She replied, "The head of John the Baptist." The girl hurried back to the king's presence and made her request. "I want you to give me at once the head on a platter, the head of John the Baptist." The king was deeply distressed, but because of his oaths and the guests, he did not wish to break his word to her. So he promptly dispatched an executioner with orders to bring back his head. He went off and beheaded him in the prison. He brought in the head on a platter and gave it to the girl. The girl, in turn, gave it to her mother. When his disciples heard about it, they came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. The Gospel of the Lord. Today we celebrate the final way by which St. John the Baptist made straight the paths of the Lord. He had been his precursor in birth, making a joy-filled in utero proclamation of his presence. He was his forerunner, preaching the message of conversion. He was his predecessor in the work of baptizing. And today, we mark how he was his precursor in imprisonment, death, and also in a vague sense, resurrection. After John the Baptist's death, when Herod heard of Jesus and what Jesus was doing, Herod, with a guilty conscience, said, "He is John the Baptist. He has been raised from the dead." The very same words that the angels would use at the tomb on Easter Sunday morning. Tertullian told us 1800 years ago that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of future Christians. We see in the blood, for example, of St. Stephen, what fructified in the conversion of Saul. But what was the fruit that came from John the Baptist's martyrdom? The blood of this proto-martyr was what prepared the way for Christ's own martyrdom, as well as the martyrdom of St. Stephen, the apostle, and so many others after Christ, down to our own age. Christ himself made that link between his precursor's death and his own when he was descending Mount Tabor, when Peter, James, and John asked him, after having seen him speaking with the prophet Elijah, why it was that everyone said Elijah would have to come first. And Jesus said to them, "I tell you, Elijah has already come." And they did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they pleased. So also will the Son of Man suffer at their hands. So we need to look at John the Baptist's martyrdom, his passion, in this Christological key. On the one hand, it seems like a disgusting tragedy, but within it, the seed of that martyrdom contains power and wisdom. Just as St. Paul would write in today's first reading to the church in Corinth, talking about Christ crucified, he would say that it's a scandal to the Jews and folly to Gentiles, but to those who believe the power and the wisdom of God. The Jews would think that death by crucifixion was a curse because that's what the Old Testament said. It would be a scandal rather than proof of God's love, proof that he was the fulfillment of the suffering servant of Isaiah, proof that he was the fulfillment of the book of wisdom, that the just man would be beset by evildoers, proof that he was the fulfillment of Psalm 22. It was the proof exactly that he wasn't the Messiah. It was a terrible scandal for them to be able to accept that the one who was supposed to kick out the Romans was himself crucified by the Romans. It was also folly to the Greeks. They thought the greatest wisdom was the wisdom to stay alive, the wisdom to be able to live well. And Jesus' death seemed to contradict totally that pattern. But to those who believe, we see it's the power and the wisdom of the fulfillment of God's self-giving love, and that God would have the last laugh, that would be precisely the first part of what would become his great glory. The martyrdom of the friend of the bridegroom happened because he was pointing out the truth of marriage to Herod and Herodias' putative bond. It was the culmination of how John was trying to prepare even Herod and Herodias to marry the true bridegroom through calling them to conversion. What he suffered was a foretelling of what Jesus himself would do out of love for us as bride. The actual scene foretells some of the elements of what Jesus himself would undergo because of his witness to the truth. During that drunken orgy, Herod allowed his stepdaughter to be pimped by a second wife. The princess came and did a striptease in front of all of Herod's drunken courtiers. And at the end of that satanic liturgy, Herod promised to give her half his kingdom. And she asked, not for birthday cake on her stepfather's birthday, but instead to be brought in a head on a platter. You can almost hear in Aramaic the grating tune of "Happy birthday to you," as everybody silently watched as the executioner brought in that bearded head. Jesus himself would be mocked. Jesus himself would be murdered in a bloodlust. But John the Baptist's death is not just a tragedy. It was a point. It was something that pointed to Christ's own power, wisdom, and glory. This is something that those in the world today still don't grasp. That a death like this could actually have not just a silver lining, but a dramatic exclamation point. But that's precisely what we mark today. What John the Baptist suffered on account of his mission as the friend of the bridegroom is a witness to the truth. What Christ's power and wisdom shows leads us all to a question Pope Francis asked us and everybody in the church 2 weeks ago when he was in Korea. He asked, when he spoke to the young people there, what are you willing to die for? Are you willing, like so many had died lay people in the history of Korea, to make that church begin to thrive? Are you willing to follow them down that path that the world seems absurd, that your culture seems absurd? But that is really the path to wisdom, power, and glory. Do we believe that our sufferings in union with Christ, although they might be scandalous to the world, are the greatest form of spiritual knowledge and energy? This is where we do it. This is where the precursor continues his work. We will hear his words echoing later on in this liturgy, pointing out the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, just like he pointed him out at the Jordan. This is where we're called to make our witness. This is where we're called to receive his wisdom and his power. As we, as we'll hear on Sunday, make our Laudate Latreia, we give our bodies, we give our lives as a holy and acceptable sacrifice, our spiritual worship. This is where we decrease so that Christ might increase within us. And this is what strengthens us to go out in love for the bride and continue this sacred preaching, a preaching given not just by our lips, but by our lives, not just by our words, but by our witness. Today on this feast of the Passion of St. John the Baptist, we ask him to intervene for us, that we might be, like him, precursors, so that Christ might come and embrace forever in the eternal wedding banquet all those who will hear and see us. Praise be Jesus Christ.